Business and Transportation for Wednesday. We're going to go a little bit out of order today, and we're going to start by opening up a work session on Senate Bill 202. Erin, why don't you remind us where we are?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 202, was first heard on the 9th and had a public hearing. Senate Bill 202 removes a minimum contract amount provisions from the definition of general contractor and repositions definition of chimney sweeps. After that meeting, a question came up about the specialty contractor language, and so we have the dash ones drafted, and it restores the minimum contract amount provisions for definition of general contractor. We do have the no revenue impact and no fiscal impact, so it's ready to go.
Okay, so we have a dash one amendment before us. Any questions from the committee? Okay, then I would move the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 202. Any objection? So ordered. Senator Starr.
Mr. Chair, I move the bill as amended to Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 202 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Schrader, I'm going to ask you probably to do this one and the next one. Just
all right, thank you.
Kind of in tandem.
Thank you.
So let's open up a work session on Senate Bill 203. Erin.
Senate Bill 203 had a public hearing on the 9th also. Senate Bill 203 makes Oregon lien law consistent with construction contractor board statutes by establishing the same threshold requirement in the amount of $2,000 for a written contract and for providing the information notice of owner or lien notices. We had some concerns from the construction contractors board, and they brought us the dash one amendments at the 9th meeting. However, some additional concerns arose, and we drafted the dash twos. The dash twos do three things. They allow a period of 2 years after a license expires when it is lapsed and may still be renewed. They authorize the construction contractors board to sanction contractors that hire employees when they have obtained their license, indicating that they have no employees. And three, deletes requirement that written contracts contain a summary of notices.
Okay. Mr. Smith, why don't you come forward just to see if the committee has any questions about the amendment. So first of all, any comments you'll have, Mr. Smith, first, and then I'll ask if there's any questions from the committee before you.
Chair Metzger, Craig Smith, Construction Contractors Board. The committee administrator did a good job of summarizing the amendments. The amendment dash two is the one that we'd like to see moved, and I'm open to any questions you have.
Okay. Questions from the committee for Mr. Smith on the amendment?
Just one.
Yes, Senator Starr.
Page 11, the new section M, or that the contractor hired employees while license is exempt under ORS 701035. It's not unusual for a contractor to change their status from exempt, non-exempt. I mean, so that's you're going after somebody that remains registered as that they're not going to have any employees and hires employees. That's what this is about.
Chair Metzger, Senator Starr, that's correct.
You okay with that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. We're in work session with a dash two.
Mr. Chair, move the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 203. I'm sorry.
Senator Starr has moved the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 203. Discussion? Any objection? So order.
Mr. Chairman, the bill is amended to Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 203 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Okay, Senator Schrader, you got the pair there.
All righty, thank you.
Why don't we go to the work session on Senate Bill 91 as Mr. Stembridge comes back up. And maybe we can review that, Mr. Stembridge, and then we'll ask Lana Butterfield to come up. She's in here. There she is. But let's start with Mr. Stembridge first.
Chairman, members, Senate Bill 91 increases the fees charged of the State Fire Marshal's Office for their liquefied petroleum gas, that's LPG, license and inspection program. And it makes a second increase effective July 1st, 2011. We heard this bill originally in January.
Okay, and we had a question about the failure rate of when people are on inspections, and so we asked them to bring that to committee. So, Ms. Butterfield, and you want to come forward and discuss that with us? So we have that on the record.
Good Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Lana Butterfield with the Northwest Propane Gas Association, and with me is Davey Zell. He's with Co-Energy in Corvallis, and I'm going to ask him to tell you about the failure rate.
Okay. Thank you. Welcome. To take your name and speak to us.
My name is Davey Zell, and I'm with Co-Energy Propane, two offices throughout the state, and representing Northwest Propane Gas Association also. The failure rate that was talked about is after all tanks are required to have an inspection, and the fire marshal's office comes by after the fact and inspects to the codes. I talked to the fire marshal's office on what those most common things are, and they are items that I don't want to make an exact quote, but the paraphrase is basically that they are violations that are violation of the code book, but they are not serious life-threatening things, but they all do have a potential. This is what we talked about on the phone with the fire marshal, and that's why they are corrected. Some examples would be in the construction process. We might set a propane tank at a residence, and in the project of finishing this house, other trades come behind us, and either the homeowner may put an electrical light within 10 feet of the tank, which does not meet code, or a heating contractor may put part of the condensing unit too close to the tank because they're not aware of the code. So when we leave the job, it may meet code, but before the final inspection by the fire marshal's office, there's something that doesn't meet code. So that has to be corrected. It's a normal process. A couple of other examples on the top of the list would be the foundations underneath the tank. It needs to be level. There again, in setting a new tank, whether it's at a new house or during us putting a retrofit, a new heater in a house, they have to be on blocks and be level. The dirt will settle where we put it, and maybe a month or two goes by before the inspection gets done, and things may settle. And we even tell the homeowner, if you see it not settling, it's like it's off a little bit. It's not a dangerous situation, but if years go by, it could become where it could roll over. That's not an extreme case, but we go on back and re-level the tank. So there's things that are not a serious health hazard or safety hazard to the public at the time, but we encourage and we like the fact that reputable companies do want to go out and fix these things. We do try to do it to code at the time, but things happen before the fire marshal gets out there, or we're also not perfect. We do have training programs for the individuals that are doing this work, but as any trade, we look for an inspection. We correct those inspections when they're brought to our attention by the homeowner, the general contractor, or the fire marshal's office.
Okay. And just for the record, you're chair of the Propane Gas Association, the users of these services.
I'm not chair. Our company is a member of. I'm actually on the legislative committee. I have been involved in the association for
about 20 years. You're the ones that are regulated.
Yes, very heavily.
And we also have, I see, representatives of the fire marshal's office here if there's a question. Is there any further questions from the committee? Concerns. I remember this originally was brought to us because they were going to go into a deficit in their program, and we had some questions about, as you were talking about, as to the failure rate of the inspection levels in terms of why we're doing that. So, any questions?
So,
yes,
Senator. So I don't mean to be dense here, Mr. Chairman, but so at this point, this bill, from your perspective. Any changes at all, anything?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, no, we support this bill, and we worked with the fire marshal over several meetings and many emails.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, and we do not have amendments for this bill.
Mr. Chair.
Hold on a second. Mr. Stemmert wants to tell me something.
This has a substantial...
Yes, it goes to Ways and Means. Yes.
Do they both go to Ways and Means? Or just...
Mr. Chairman, it does not now have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. You could recommend that it go to Ways and Means.
So we're sending 91 to Ways and Means? And 88 to Ways and Means?
Senate Bill 88 has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. This is Senate Bill 91. Does not have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, but according to the Legislative Fiscal Office, should have... Eventually, it could have from this side or you may prefer to have the House send to Ways and Means.
I think we should send both. Yeah, because I think just to avoid questions on the floor, we should just send it to Ways and Means now.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Senator Starr.
I'd make a motion to move Senate Bill 91 to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 91 to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any discussion? Any objection?
Do you want to add a do pass with that or without recommendation? How do you want to put that?
I would say do pass, I guess.
Do pass. What's a do pass? Discussion?
Just the point that these are pretty significant fee increases, and normally I wouldn't be excited about supporting these kind of fee increases, but that the association whose fees are being raised are asking for the bill. So based on that, I'm supporting the bill.
Okay. Any other discussion? Any objection? All right. It's on its way, Ways and Means. Close the work session on 91. Open a work session on Senate Bill 88. Mr. Stenberg.
Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 88 increases the license renewal and per customer fees for non-retail fuel facilities. I'm going to call them cardlock facilities. There's one raise that comes July 1st, 2009, and then another one that comes. You have the Dash 3 amendment, which reduces the amount of gallonage required from 900 to 500, and it changes the audit requirement from 5% of facilities to 2.5% of facilities. It does not change the proposed fee increases.
Okay. This is Senator George. Had some questions, and we kind of put him in charge of working on this. So I think I'll start with Senator George, talk about what you went through on this bill, and if there's others that you would like to bring up to talk about it, we'll put it in your hands.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I sat down with the Fire Marshal's office. They were great. I appreciated their efforts. Basically, what I was trying to get at is that there are two pretty significant fee increases at the Fire Marshal's office, and I was asking if there's a way for us to expedite it. I talked a little bit about the fact that a lot of businesses are going to the card lock to save some money during these tough economic times. We don't want to make it difficult for them to do so. At the same time, we want the facility safe. I had the Dash 3s drafted up, but in my conversations, I made the mistake at my end about changing their audit requirements. My understanding is the Fire Marshal's office has sent my office a slight change, and I think we're agreement on exactly the direction we want to go with the amendments. But at this point, the amendments that I did draft up, the Dash 3s, do not meet the agreement that I had with the Fire Marshal's office.
Okay. So just point out what we're going to change on this so when we bring it back, we'll be prepared.
Basically, what I was trying to get at is I was trying to reduce sort of their audit requirements and get them to focus rather on paperwork on the safety side. So I wanted, what I was asking to do is that as more and more businesses use the card lock facilities for their vehicles, we don't want to get everybody caught up in paperwork battles and audit functions. And so what I want to do is get them to focus on the safety side of it with the additional fee increase. And what I ended up doing was is that I changed the audit requirements sort of inadvertently. And so what we're doing is we're reducing the non-retail customers' requirements from 2,400 to 900 gallons per year to 500 so that we make sure that people aren't getting caught up in that in the sort of the pivot point. And then that allows the Fire Marshal's office to really focus on the safety side to make sure that the facilities are safe for people to use.
Okay. So is the Dash 3 that we have now correct?
The Dash 3 we have is not correct based on the agreement that I have with the...
Okay.
That's different from the Dash 2. So
what's that?
That's different from the Dash
2. Oh, it is.
Right?
Dash 3s.
I thought
Dash
this was... I think we may... We just got this.
Oh, great.
Let's ask the Fire Marshal to come up.
Yeah, the Fire Marshal's
in the Dash 3.
Gotcha. I didn't realize that LC was going to get those to us fast. That's
well, we didn't think they would. The Dash 3 on Section 7, colleagues, restores the audit function. Do you have a copy of the Dash 3, sir? Because I think we're talking about Section 7, which had been deleted or partially deleted, and now has been restored, but with the change in the retail accounts that were subject to audit. So if you would identify yourself for the record and give your version of the discussion in the work group and whether these meet the needs of the Fire Marshal.
Chair Metzer and members of the committee, Randy Simpson, State Fire Marshal. I'm working with Senator George and his staff. the dash three amendments that we currently have in front of us is very workable for us. What this still allows us to do is to do a lesser time restrictive paperwork audit, but it still allows us to make sure that the weekly inspections that the industry is required to do per statute and the training requirements of the customers are being done. But it will free up some time for, you know, we only have two compliance specialists that drive the whole state of Oregon and a lot of remote areas to do these inspections, but this will suffice to help us focus on the safety aspects of this program.
Well, and what I appreciate the work that Senator George and you did on this. I would hope that with the change in the requirement that, because I do know you have limited staff, that strategically you might be able to then utilize that staff to get more often to different parts of the state, since you have, you know, less aggregate to necessarily do, although with lowering the gallage over a period of time you may get more customers, but at least immediately you might be able to target some areas a bit more than you have in the past.
Chairman, sir, yes. The two compliance specialists we have really worked hard at streamlining the travels, and from what they used to do in the past, they used to actually drive past facilities that they'd already done going to another one, but they've actually sat down and streamlined their mapping of the industry to make sure that they don't make a double trip past one. We're really focusing on getting to all those, but without doubling back on them, unless we need to come back for an abatement of an issue that's a safety issue to make sure that, you know, that reinspection needs to be done.
So, Mr. Chair, I guess I stand corrected. I didn't realize that LC was going to get these amendments out to us so fast, and they've done so. So I guess the dash threes are the agreed to.
Yeah, you're right. That's why I mentioned that again, because, well, we didn't think we would get them, but they're doing a great job for our committee.
Good work at LC.
So just to clarify for the committee, so we reduced the gallons required for the card lock from 900 to 500. Hopefully that will provide more access to some folks, but not lower the threshold to a point where we would have other issues. We've lowered the percentage of audits that have to be done, but then hopefully the fire marshal will be able to get to other areas with the two people they do have and maybe get better service without having to have a heavier workload and still accomplish the task. I think that's our objective. Any questions further of our witnesses? Okay, we're in work session with a dash three.
Mr. Chairman, the dash three amendments to Senate Bill 88.
Okay, Senator Starr has moved the dash three amendment to Senate Bill 88. Discussion? Objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 88 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 88 as amended with a due pass recommendation to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Thank you for your help. Thank you, Senator George, for working on that. Well, why don't we do, let's open up a work session on Senate Bill 171. Ask Dan Clem, Director of the Department of Aviation, to come forward. Tell us where we are with this bill. I know we're not ready for takeoff, but at least you can update of where we are.
Mr. Chair, members of the Senate Business and Transportation Committee, my name is Dan Clem. I'm the Director for the Oregon Department of Aviation. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for your indulgence. We have made great progress on this bill. We've met a couple of times, have gone over language for a couple of amendments. There are still one or two major issues to resolve, specifically the coordination piece with local governments, how Oregon Department of Aviation does that. The dash six amendment, which I think you have, may still need to be amended to account for resolving that piece. So with your indulgence, we'd like to continue to work with the counties and cities on resolving that issue. You'll note that the dash six amendment does also include some exemption for mobile communications radio service provider towers and also those structures that have already been approved by the FAA. In addition to that, the dash 6 also requires that the FSEC process now include the Oregon Department of Aviation. So, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, four of the five major points that we've been working on the last couple of weeks have been resolved, and we have one other issue to resolve in terms of coordination of local land use jurisdictions, and appreciate your continued indulgence as we whittle out that last piece. With that, I can answer any questions you have.
Okay, thank you. Is there a question, Mr. Clem, on 171 at the moment? All right. I'm going to close the work session on that. You stay right there. Open up the work session on Senate Bill 169. Mr. Stenbridge, I think I'll start with you, kind of where we are with this, and then go to Mr. Clem, and then I think we have a couple other people in the audience who I'd like to hear from.
The Department of Aviation and local governments have been meeting on this one also. This one started out to adding airports with permanent control towers, a list of airports for which land use and activity rules must be adopted by the LCDC and local government land use regulation. It required local governments to amend comprehensive plans. We have we went through the dash one amendment, which deletes a deadline except if funding is provided by a state agency. The dash two, which you have a copy of, exempts PDX from this from the bill.
Okay. No, I don't need to know why you're exempted. And Linda Ludwig, would you come up forward from the League of Oregon Cities? I'll call it the Idaho Power exemption. We may later, by the way, discuss that, but I think for the moment we don't need it. Ms. Ludwig, you want to take your name for the record and maybe tell us, I know you were involved in a work group on this, of where you see that we currently are and what our challenges are still ahead with 169.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Linda Ludwig, League of Oregon Cities. Yes, I was involved with the work group with Director Clem and with Art Schlack and representatives with from your office and Mr. Stenbridge on 169. And we did have some, I would clarify it as a vigorous conversation about the bill. At the end, the League's position really is not to be able to support this. We see this as primarily a budget bill, a budget appropriation problem, and would be more than willing to work with the co-chairs and Director Clem if indeed the Department of Aviation can get a budgetary appropriation in this coming biennium for this work.
Okay. Mr. Schlack? Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Art Schlack with the Association of Oregon Counties. I apologize for being down the hall talking about some transportation funding package at this point that the House is entertaining.
Anything we need to know?
Not yet, Mr. Chair, but shortly, I hope. I, too, want to at least echo my appreciation for the director of the Aviation Department for work sitting down and discussing both 169 and 171. I think that the question about 169 centers around, is it appropriate to change the requirements in the existing statute as it relates to airport planning prior to being assured that there is adequate funding to undertake the requirements that would fall to cities and counties. In today's climate, both at the state and locally, certainly for counties, I guess I have to come down on the side of saying it's a premature to change those requirements until we are assured that there is funding for local government counties at this point to undertake these requirements. And the department director has indicated his earnest efforts to solicit that funding, but without knowing that it's there within at least the budget for the next fiscal year, again, I think it's premature to change the requirements that are currently in statute. With regard to Senate Bill 171, we have had...
You haven't opened... You're in 169 now. You want to close this and open 171?
No. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Should I...
Just go ahead.
Okay. Mr. Chair, with regard to 171, we've had some number of discussions with regard to the proposal, and it seems to me that the issue at hand is one of coordination. Coordination between the airport manager and the land use authority at this point. And I have suggested to Mr. Clem that Section 2, if it was changed to something that dealt with coordination between the airport and the airport managers and local government, that is a place that we could go. But I think to basically say that you preclude certain kinds of activities without talking about who's going to implement those and how and what the authority and responsibility is, I think that, again, is an open-ended place that we're not, that at least counties are not comfortable going at this point.
Okay,
coordination is something that I think can be addressed in Section 2.
Okay, Mr. Lack. So, Mr. Clem, I just want to ask you regarding 169 and the fiscal part of this. Where are you in the Ways and Means process with your budget? Because I think that's going to... kind of guide this committee as to whether the policy thing is going to be appropriate at this time or not.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. The work session for the Oregon Department of Aviation budget is scheduled for March 24th as of yesterday afternoon. And in that request is expenditure limitation allocation for the financial aid to municipalities grant program, which is the appropriate tool that the department would use to make grants to. I want to clarify that your direction to us was to only require that which we can provide funding for. Currently in law, there is no funding scheme attached to the requirement. It's an absolute requirement in law now that upon periodic review, which has been changed, it made sense to change our scheme to match the same one that this body and the governor signed into law in 2005, and that is only require that the work be done where funding can be provided. So we've adopted the consistent same scheme in the dash six amendment for the requirement of in 171, and in 169, and I want to make sure that we understand that we fully intend on pursuing the approval to restore the FAM grant program so that grants can be made, and only those where grants are made are they required to be. The airport planning rule is required to be implemented. So we have tied funding to the requirement. What's unknown yet is whether or not I have an approved budget. So I would concur that, you know, that there's some, that maybe this is tied to that and wouldn't want to, that doesn't make sense to say that it isn't. It is. To create a separate appropriation only for this is problematic at this point within my budget. I have asked for the FAM grant program, which would provide monies for these requirements.
What I think we'll do, Mr. Clemmon, your work session schedule is still consistent with our Senate bill. So I will speak with the chair of the Ways and Means Subcommittee about this issue, but the policy as well as the funding part. And as you go through that process, I think it will give us greater clarity as to what we're going to do, and we'll have an opportunity to do that prior to our Senate bills. So we're just going to close. Yes?
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to clarify that what Mr. Clem was referring to is the dash one amendment to...
Yeah, Senate you said dash 6, so it was a dash 1.
Correction. It is the Section 3 language on the second page.
Okay. So let's close the work session on that, and we'll still continue to work on that and ask that also in the Ways and Means process that our cities and counties also continue to work with the department and both the policy and the juxtaposition with funding, and then we'll have that discussion. Yes, Ms. Ludwig.
Mr. Chair, would it be remiss to be able to put one more comment in the record?
No, we'll reopen the work session on 169.
I appreciate you talking to the Ways and Means Chair of the subcommittee. I just want to put for the record, there is not agreement on the dash 1 amendment that it does do, in fact, what Director Clem intends it to do yet. So I just wanted you to be aware of that.
Right, and that's why I've asked if you guys continue to work together on both the policy as well as the funding part of that before we revisit 169 again.
Will do.
Okay. Now we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 169, and we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 147. Mr. Stembridge?
Mr. Chairman, I believe you have, this is the, this started out as a landscape contractor's bill for maintaining irrigation systems using compressed air. You have a couple of amendments that involve exemptions for or authorizing plumbers to do some of the irrigation work. You have the dash 1 and the dash 4.
Okay, what I'm going to do, and as you probably have been colleagues, visited by folks on this, and I've told them I each give them an opportunity to comment on what's before us. I would like to keep our discussion as we have comments, though, on whether we should or should not include the dash 4 amendment, because I think that's the one that we will operate with or without. So I start with the landscaping board, if you would like to come forward and give us your perspective on the dash 4 amendment. I will then ask some proponents of the dash 4 have questions. In fact, why don't, since we only have one coming up, why don't you come up at the same time, fill the three chairs. And maybe it'd be more appropriate to go with Mr. Lyon first, since he's proposed this, and then we'll go to your reaction to that.
Chair Metzger, members of the committee, Devin Lyon here for the Oregon Association of Plumbing, Heating, Cooling Contractors, and we are here today in support of the Dash 4 amendments, which we did ask Senator Schrader's office to draft for us. And, frankly, would you like me just to...
I would like to tell you what it does and why you think this would be appropriate.
Sure. Currently, the Dash 4 amendments would allow a plumbing contractor, it's sort of two different things, would allow a plumbing contractor to work as a subcontractor under a licensed landscaper to install irrigation plumbing, or it would allow a licensed plumbing contractor to install irrigation plumbing not under a licensed landscaper, but following the plans of a licensed landscaper. That's really the gist of the bill, of the amendment.
Okay. Your turn.
Chair Metzger and member of the committee, for the record, my name is Mike Snyder. I'm the administrator of the Landscape Contractors Board. this amendment is different than what we originally began with. Dash 1 amendments is what we went to the committee with to go to committee to talk about. I really appreciate the plumbers working with you on this. My take on this is I have to be a little bit reserved because I think the devil's in the details. As a regulatory agency, we don't quite know what the impact of this is going to be in terms of who's going to enforce these laws. Landscape work is now regulated by the Landscape Contractors Board. Plumbers would not be regulating this work. It'd be under our jurisdiction to regulate it. So I don't quite know how this all works for us yet. We need a little more time to kind of digest this and see how it all works for us. We have talked to the industry, and they're opposed to the amendment. And we would really prefer this not to come to this bill. Because we were just trying to do some housekeeping, and all of a sudden we're faced with a turf battle. And so the industry needs to speak for this rather than me in this case.
And we'll, if your gentleman knows, we will ask him in a moment. On the Dash 4 amendment, what it does is, you know, Senator George, who worked actively on this as well with the Dash 2, was even more specific, was just a licensed journeyman on this. The Dash 4 does then involve your agency in terms of supervision for contracting, mm-hmm. Or at least for planning. And what it does do, and I think Senator George made a very convincing argument on this, but and that's why I will hear some counter to that. But I think with the Dash 4, it is still, as was the Dash 2, limited the plumber available only to working on irrigation systems, which would seem to be under their purview anyway. It's not like, are participating in the entire landscape in business. It's very specific to working on an irrigation system. So I've tried to reach it as we've talked about this as to why that would be inappropriate. And in my the reason I said we would discuss the Dash 4, because it's a little more restrictive than what we had talked about before and trying to play the Solomon's choice here. But we'll see where the committee wants to go on that. I'm going to ask one of the industry people to come forward, but first, questions of the agency or the other two gentlemen here. Senator Schrader.
I just want to get some clarity. The concern seems to be that whether or not the Landscaping Board regulates this. I'm assuming if a plumber moves ahead with a solid plan that's been pulled together by a licensed landscape architect, that they have another, I'm assuming, their own regulatory structure, that as they move ahead and put something in the ground, that there are pieces in place that make sure that's done correctly.
Yes,
based on the plan. So can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, Chair Metzger and Senator Schrader, my name is Kevin Curry with the Plumbing, Heating, and Cooling Contractors. And yes, by using the contractors specifically in the bill, they're licensed and bonded as contractors. And so if a homeowner, for example, had a set of plans developed by a licensed landscaper and hired a plumbing contractor to install them and had a concern about the installation process, there would be a process for them to go through, a claim process.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions? This group? Okay, thank you. Would you like to come forward?
Yeah.
Oh, deferring, huh? Okay. Step back. We may have questions in a few moments, but I want to make sure that we're clear before see where the committee wants to go.
Mr. Chair, committee members, for the record, my name is Bill Cross. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Landscape Contractors Association, and our association has not taken a position on this. There may have been a misunderstanding with with Mike Snyder. We just got a copy of them. I have shared them with a couple of our industry people. I think we have a concern, and the concern being you have a design plan and now a plumber will be installing the piping in the field, and sometimes design plans are complex, sometimes they're simple, but sometimes in the field they get changed, and we're simply I haven't had a chance to really talk to the industry about what protection there would be, or how do we ensure that those changes occur according to a revised plan. Unlike building codes, where there's an inspection at the end of the day, so to speak, when a project's completed, irrigation systems don't get that. And so they may be used for a couple of years before you find out that, wait a minute, it's not operating according to the way it was designed. So we have a concern. We're not opposed to the bill, though. We haven't really had a chance to fully weigh in. I think much of what they've tried to do, though, with obviously using a landscape designed or landscape architect to design the plan to follow for the installation is a big step forward. And so we're not uncomfortable. We're just kind of, I think, need to answer a couple questions about what actually happens out in the field.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Cross. First of all, questions of Mr. Cross. Thank you. Ivy, as we do on this committee on issues like this, I'd like to leave it up to the committee on what they feel is the direction. So I'd like to hear from the committee on your thoughts, and I think I'll start with Senator George.
Well, as you know, Mr. Chair, I drafted the Dash 2 amendments, which went farther than what the plumber said. As far as I'm concerned, if folks are bonded and licensed to do something like fixing their plumbing in my house, it seems a little ridiculous that they can't do the plumbing outside my yard, which has less liability, I would say. So, as I understood, I drafted the Dash 2s, but as a compromise, the plumbers came up with the Dash 4s through Senator Schrader's office. I'm not as happy as I am with the Dash 2s, but I'm willing to go for some kind of compromise that kind of cuts the baby in half, I suppose, and gets there. So I'm okay with the Dash 4 amendments.
Okay. Senator
Schrader. I just wanted to say that was the intent of the Dash 4 amendments, is to actually come to more of a compromise of how we could move forward with this. I'm assuming that once the design is done, professionally, it is a solid professional design, and that certainly the aptitude of folks who do that kind of plumbing work and installation work should really be able to follow without much issue a solid design. So when I was approached to do this, again, the intent was to come with a compromise and give some more opportunities for folks to the design, for instance, was pulled together and folks couldn't actually implement it at a time. They'd have more of a choice down the road about who they could actually use to install the design. So.
Okay, thanks, Sarah. Okay. Senator Berger, do you have any thoughts on this?
Well, I'm happy to see that there's been some compromise, and I'm appreciative of those that were involved in trying to get to a little bit better understanding, because I was concerned.
Mm-hmm. Are you comfortable with the dashboard?
I think the dashboards look okay.
Okay. Senator Starr.
Politics, legislating is the art of compromise. I think this is it. So I'm pleased. I think the dashboards are fine. I would just echo the comments of the other members.
Okay. Well, we're in a work session.
I move the -4 amendment to Senate Bill 147.
Senator Starr has moved the -4 amendment to Senate Bill 147. Is there further discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 147 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 147 as amended by the -4 amendment to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Objection? So ordered. Senator George, please carry the bill.
Yep.
Okay, Mr. Stenberg, you want to tell us about tomorrow?
You have two reports from TriMet tomorrow and a hearing on Senator George's bill on the Department of Transportation contracting.
Okay. All right. With that, yes, Senator Starr.
Senator Berger may want to vote on 202 and 203. I think she was
okay. We're still in committee. So I ask for unanimous consent that the rules be suspended for the purpose of allowing Senator Berger to vote on some of the previous legislation. Is there any objection? So ordered. Senator Berger, start where you would like.
Senate Bill 202.
And how do you vote?
And I vote aye.
Senator Berger votes aye on Senate Bill 202.
Senate Bill 203, and I vote aye.
Senator Berger votes aye on Senate Bill 203. Is there anything else? Okay, is there any other thing to come before the committee? If not, we're adjourned.